Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Becker's Healthcare in conjunction with Intuitive. Intuitive is a global technology leader in minimally invasive care and a pioneer of robotic-assisted surgery. This is Scott Becker, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by Jim Berg. Jim serves currently as the interim president and CEO of Roper St. Francis in Charleston, South Carolina. Roper St. Francis, a great system. Jim was called out of retirement to help manage the system for a couple of years, done a fantastic job. He's going to talk to us today about specific experience he's had in a previous position with the Ebola crisis and how some of those lessons transcend into this current coronavirus situation. Jim, can you take a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll get into the substance of the podcast.
Yes, well, thank you, Scott. As you've heard, I'm a senior healthcare leader. I have now 47 years of experience, started when I was 10 in 1973. As you mentioned, I'm currently the interim president and CEO of Roper St. Francis Healthcare in Charleston, South Carolina. Prior to that, I was president of Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. Texas Health Dallas is a 875-bed flagship for Texas Health Resources. I was also a board member for American Hospital Association Health Forum, as well as AHA Solutions, Inc. I'm also a retired Air Force Medical Service Officer with over 20 years.
Jim, you had this magnificent experience at Texas Health Presbyterian, great system that really dealt with Ebola situation, which is a scary situation, and we're going to talk about that in great deal today and some of the lessons there. Take a moment before we do so and just, you know, tell me about the tireless efforts, the sort of love of what they do, of your staff and team, the nurses, the doctors, the leadership, and what they've meant to Roper St. Francis and the community through this crisis.
Well, thank you, Scott. As I like to say, the force is strong here. The culture is very strong here. I'm very impressed with the frontline staff, the nurses who are working our special units, our EBS workers, our respiratory therapists, our physicians, throughout the line, up and down and across. I just see excellence. They provide this compassionate, quality healthcare to all those in need right now, and I'm just overwhelmed with pride as I see what they do. The leaders here are running the command structure. Greg Self and Chris McLean are just exceptional, and they're supported by many leaders and physicians who they're just at the top of their game here, doing what they do. I'm almost like the proud father who is teaching the teenage driver. I'm at the coaching side, helping them get to their greatest good, but they're the one driving it. I'm just there to help them get to where they need to be.
Well, fantastic. We'll talk now about some of the experiences you had in running a health system that dealt with Ebola patients back in 2014. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's like going into the twilight zone. I think during that time, everyone heard about Ebola, but you never thought it was going to come to your own situation. We quote a lot from the movies, and it's one of our favorite movies is Dodgeball, where it says, remember your training, trust your instincts. You know, that was what Ebola was for Presbyterian Hospital of Dallas. Started in September 25th of 2014 when first patient arrived. And I think we all know how the story begins and how it ends, but it's what's in between that makes it fascinating. And the lessons learned are very rich and useful for certainly Roper St. Francis healthcare. It's managing certainly the operations, the logistics, a lot of information, the dynamics of people. And then, of course, in that situation, not so much here was 47 media trucks, two helicopters seemingly circling always, as well as the significant presence of government and health officials on campus, especially CDC. So it was a fascinating process. So what I've been able to share here is I have what I call my, top 20 lessons learned from that event. And most of those are actually in place here. So that's all good.
and take a moment and talk about, well, take me for one more moment through the Texas situation, Ebola, because how scared was your staff? I mean, that's a disease that's got a really high lethality rate, mortality rate, infectious, but probably not as infectious as this, but staff is just learning when it happens, and Ebola is a scary thing from movies and stuff like that. How scared was the staff at that time?
Well, in Presbyterian Dallas, fear was a big issue, as not only just with staff, even our own physicians, the community, even though the Ebola event happened in just a portion of the hospital, we still operated the logistics and the care of other patients throughout, even though our census went down as much as 50%. Largely, we kept operational. Fear was a huge issue. Let me just say that the number one takeaway from Ebola and certainly in place here is how you treat your staff, how they're trained, how they're equipped with PPE, PAPRs as necessary, how they're drilled, how they're supported in terms of themselves, their family, their health, their well-being in terms of compensation, becomes critically important. These events will come and go. I just happen to be through two of them, so I have battle campaign ribbons for Ebola and now COVID-19 for my work uniform. I say that as a retired military officer, but how you treat your staff will be remembered for over the next 10 years. That's the culture of your organization. So we've been very careful to treat them well, and even though we look at people working fewer hours, largely we made sure their compensation was taken care of.
And that's fantastic. And so talk about five of the 20 rules for dealing with the crises, just so, because we're on a podcast, five will be about the amount our listeners can take in well. Some of your thoughts on what are the sort of the five guidelines or rules or lessons you take away or you'd give to other leaders?
Well, I mean, obviously everyone's, I'm sure, implemented their incident command and control framework, but the steady, calm leadership is critically important. The leader should be a senior leader, in my thoughts, who has this calm, steady presence, has the confidence. It's how he or she makes decisions and then how he or she communicates those to everyone so they know what's going on. So it's the transparency with and the trust that you have with staff, including physicians, as well as the media. Number two, then, is, again, how you support your teammates or your staff. Certainly, all those things I mentioned earlier are in play. Number three is, and probably as important, is how do you come out of this thing? It's like every good crisis you don't want to waste. It's an opportunity to build on lessons learned and go to a new level. So it's what we call here at Roper St. Francis the Recovery and Thrive Agenda, and that's being heavily worked and about ready to roll out. Beyond that, it's just the how we organize the logistics, the PPE supplies, the support of ancillaries, environmental services, security. All those things have to be well organized and in play. And then the other is the constant learning that you take away from the situation. I mean, for example, in our physician practices, are now seeing a significant redirection to telehealth visits. And that's something that will continue going forward. And another one, kind of a fun thing, and it's outside of the five, is the injection of humor to the situation. In Ebola in Dallas, it was there are too many stories that occurred every day, and so the question was, who is going to play our part in the future movie? Here at Roper St. Francis, is every day is a new movie quote that we can inject into to our situation. Just to keep things lively and interesting.
But those culture pieces, aside from the competence pieces of the PPE and make sure everybody has what they need, which is so, so important to confidence, that competence is so important, but keeping the culture positive, make sure people feel taken care of, making sure that you keep it light when you can. It's a very serious thing. It's very scary. But as light as you can, while working through very serious things, so you leave with the stress reduced just a little bit, people can operate better and be happier and keep their own immune systems healthy. So important. You know, with one of the things that so many of us are sort of trying to figure out is with Ebola, MERS, SARS, swine flu, they all sort of went away at some point. Many of them, it took a cycle, one of them, it took a year or two, and they sort of went away. Here, it seems like people aren't that confident that that's where we go on this. What do you see as sort of the longer-term situation here? Any thoughts on that, Jim? And I know I didn't pre-send you that question, but I'm curious as to whether you have any thoughts on it from your experiences.
Well, Scott, my thoughts are that yesterday was Ebola, today it's COVID-19, tomorrow may be Ebola 2 or MERS or some other interesting and fascinating disease. The point is we're going to manage this thing well, but we need to learn. One of the big takeaways from Ebola was making sure that you had a Navy SEAL crackerjack team who is well trained and disciplined and is the front line of defense when essentially your organization has this present to your doorstep, having a cohorted unit that's well supplied and not just for today but for tomorrow, making sure that you have the resources. What we find in this COVID-19, some of the challenges, quite honestly, here at Roper St. Francis, probably the same throughout the land, is a lack of supplies. We're okay, but it's not without a lot of work. The other is getting the lab testing, making sure that things are much smoother now that we have our own in-house testing that we can turn around in 45 minutes. When it was taking many days, that became problematic, that we had so many PUIs, persons under investigation or patients under investigation, that we were doubling up on PPE, just treating them as though they were active. So I think going forward, we can't lose sight of the opportunities to train key staff, make sure that they have the training, they're drilled, and because this won't be the last, there'll be others.
100%. I mean, what a fascinating situation. But it's fascinating to hear your perspective, actually, on sort of like, I mean, PPE, adequate but not abundant, is sort of, and sort of made the most of it to make it work. And would have been worse probably if a ton of COVID-19 patients in your hospital overflowing the ventilators and so forth. So you could see in some spots the PPE situation would have been just brutal. And even there, it works in part because you're not doing all the elective and other procedures that you otherwise would be doing. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I mean, we looked at our predictive models. Since Bonsecours Mercy is one of our owners, produced a they calculated what our expectations were and the timelines. Fortunately, the curve's kind of leveled off and we're not anywhere near that. But if we were stretched for that, that would have exceeded our capacity. So we dealt with that with some rigorous planning to what if that happened. We're just happy that it didn't occur. So today, for example, we have 8 inpatients, and that's well within the norms of standard operations.
That's fantastic, and congratulations. And what about the testing? What is, obviously, there's so much discussion on the national stage. It's such a fascinating discussion because the narrative month ago or just a couple weeks ago was on ventilators and PPE, and I see it. The PPE is still extremely challenging depending on the situation, but getting better. We have a local facility that just got a huge shipload of PPE, and it's just that kind of signals that indicate that things are starting to get better, not great, but better. Testing seems to be still running a little bit behind where everything else is. What's your sense of testing and how critical testing is to rational reopens and so forth?
Well, I think testing is critically important. I mean, that was a turning point for Roper St. Francis Healthcare when it was just last week or so that we were able to do our own in-house testing. Before that, we relied on others, and the turnaround time was a lot longer than what we would hope for. And again, as I said earlier, it was a point of excessive use of PPE because you didn't know. So if you're able to test quickly, then you know what you're dealing with, and then you can move forward. So instead of having 70 or 80 patients under investigation just out there, we're down to almost nothing. So that's a critical point.
And do you have a sense of, you know, and the only understanding I've come to from talking to enough people is that getting the testing ramped up is challenging for a million different reasons, and not placing blame anyplace, just a difficult thing in a population of 330 million people. What's your sense of it? At what point does the testing situation that you've got to do at Roper St. Francis becomes a little bit more uniform and universal in our country?
Well, I think that's the huge takeaway. Again, there were two problems from my perspective. One was just not being prepared with PPE, having everything that you need, and then scrambling, you know, for the N95 masks and ventilators, not knowing what was going to happen. You know, everybody expecting much worse than what the reality is, at least in South Carolina. The other is the testing. And going forward, if you're going to manage this as part of your routine operations and going back to whatever normal state is, testing has to be rapid and accurate. How we do that throughout the country, those who can make that happen, that's a must have.
And it seems to sort of like it moving at the pace we don't want it to, but moving in the right direction, it seems like finally. And I think many of us have come to the conclusion that shortage of vaccines and medicines to really get business going fully inside of health systems and outside of health systems, testing is going to be just a critical part of that. If not, we walk around with so much fear.
Well, I think so. I mean, if our society returns to any state of normal, sporting events, whatever, how do you ensure that you're not going to have a reoccurrence? So there has to be. You can't test 50,000 people all at once, but somehow that has to be figured out, and testing has to be part of that equation.
It sure seems like it. So let me ask you one final question, Jim. Any thoughts you'd like to give to the healthcare workers, your system, and throughout the country? Any quick thoughts for them?
Well, in terms of an organization surviving this in a positive way, as to say, don't let any good crisis go to waste, is really culture. Your organizational culture is your secret sauce. How you deal with this, how you make decisions, it comes back to the leadership, the structure, how you share the transparency, how you treat your people. It's a relationship business. You know, there's a lot of science obviously involved and a lot of logistics, but good leaders are going to figure this thing out the best they can. And if anything, Roper St. Francis specifically, I expect, just like Presbyterian Dallas did, that we're going to come out bigger, better, stronger, much more disciplined, and really focused on the right things going forward, using this as leverage to move us where we need to be.
No, and that's fantastic. You've done a remarkable job, and what a remarkable experience having dealt with the Ebola crises. It's so insightful to hear you talk about the testing, the PPE issues, and so forth, and where you're at today versus a couple weeks ago, because it's really a prescription for the rest of the country. And so it's so helpful, Jim. Thank you so much for joining us today. What a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much for listening today. This podcast was brought to you by Becker's Healthcare in conjunction with Intuitive. Intuitive is the global technology leader in minimally invasive care and a pioneer of robotic-assisted surgery.